Indeed, among the richest blessings that we have, as Neil expressed in his prayer, is our children. And with that blessing comes the responsibility to train them. And in our prayer with Neil, we ask God to help us do that. Besides the continual care that He exercises in our lives every day, the Holy Spirit has provided for us a manual to help us as parents in training our children. And we're studying tonight from a book that is particularly a practical manual for child rearing, for parental guidance. And so we're going to be looking at Proverbs chapter 1, verse 8 through 19. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 8 through 19. If you will, open your Bible there and we'll read that little short section of Scripture. Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. Indeed, they are a graceful wreath to your head and ornaments about your neck. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, come with us, let us lie in wait for blood. Let us ambush the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them alive like Sheol, even whole as those who go down to the pit. We will find all kinds of precious wealth. We will fill our houses with spoil. Throw in your lot with us. We shall all have one purse. My son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your feet from their path, for their feet run to evil and they hasten to shed blood. Indeed, it is useless to spread the baited net in the sight of any bird, but they lie in wait for their own blood. They ambush their own lives. So are the ways of everyone who gains by violence. It takes away the life of its possessors. So we start off our class with the first question here. It's introduced in verse 8. If you prayed with Neil, you said amen. Then this question is very important to you. You may not be a parent any longer. We've got a lot of folks in here that have completed the rearing of their children, but you may be a grandparent and have opportunity to influence your grandchildren. And there's some great counsel for us as well. And I hope that the young people who are old enough to understand what we're talking about in this class tonight will listen carefully to these words of wisdom from the book of Proverbs. Because you will be faced with the temptation that is referred to in this text during your life. So we ask the question, what is the foundational source to help a young man whose life is ahead of him? The decisions he makes now may influence the next 30, 40, 60 years, who knows? And so, what foundational source is set before him to help make the right decision, according to verse 8? What? Parents. When you look at verse 8, hear my son, he's not talking about the writer of the Proverbs being a biological father. The relationship of son-father or daughter-teacher is a very common one, particularly among the Hebrews. And it occurs often in the book of Proverbs and a number of other places in the Bible. John talks to his children in 1 John repeatedly. Not his children in the flesh, but those who he is teaching. So this is the teacher. As a wise father, not literally father, but as a wise father would counsel his son about life. And it's interesting, in this teaching, he points the child, the boy, the young man, to his own father and mother. He says, do not forsake your mothers or your fathers' teaching and instruction. When you look at this term son, you may think of 8-year-old, 12-year-old, 15-year-old. While the term may include those ages, the word son does not necessarily refer to a young person that young. Look over in chapter 5 and verse 20, and you'll see a couple of verses that we'll look at that will illustrate the point. So even though a young man or young woman may be 18 or 20 or older, there's value in heeding wise parents' instruction. And the assumption in the passage we're reading is that these parents are wise and godly parents. In chapter 5 and verse 20, why should you, my son, be exhilarated with an adulteress and embrace the bosom of a foreigner? So here's a young man old enough to be married and tempted by sexual lust. But he calls him my son, the one I'm striving to guide and to teach. In chapter 6 and verse 1, my son, if you become surety for your neighbor and have given a pledge for a stranger. So he is old enough to have funds or means that he could put for someone else. So you can see that son is not limited to a very young child in this book, but someone that this wise teacher is striving to guide and counsel. We may think that when we're past the age of 8 or 10 or 12, that there's nothing to be gained by parental instruction. That's a big mistake. Oftentimes when we're 16 and 18 is when we can really benefit from our parents' instruction, because it's particularly at that age that we're going to meet the kind of temptations that he talks about in this particular text. So he says, hear your father's instruction, do not forsake your mother's teaching. It's interesting that in the Old Testament, under the law of Moses, they were to gather the people together way back in the book of Deuteronomy every 7 years. And the law was to be read by the priest, and in the audience would be the children, whoever could hear and understand. But yet there's no direction here toward that means of learning. That's a valuable means of learning, to get religious teachers to teach and even the children to listen and understand. I preach and I teach and I try to develop lessons and make comments that'll be beneficial to the young people in the audience. But the focus here is upon listening to your mother and father. And so this makes it incumbent upon a father and a mother to do teaching. Sometimes when people choose a church, we're talking Sunday morning, can I attend or become a member of that church? One of the first things people look for is, do they have children's classes? I don't know that you could have found a church in the New Testament that had children's classes. I'm not opposed to them, but that's not the purpose of the church. The training of children lies squarely on the shoulder of mom and dad. And this young man or woman, you can make it either one, is encouraged to listen to the wise counsel of godly parents. Throughout the book of Proverbs, we said this is a great manual for child rearing. Look at chapter 4. This duty of training your children is not something that can be hand it off to someone else. Well, I'll send them to a Christian school and let them do it. I'll let grandma and grandpa do it, etc. Rather, it's the responsibility of the mother and father. Listen, chapter 4:1, hear, O sons, the instruction of a father, and give attention that you may gain understanding. For I give you sound teaching, do not abandon my instruction. This is very interesting. So here's the teacher now, listen to what he says about his past. When I was a son to my father, tender and the only son in the sight of my mother, then he sought me and said to me, let your heart hold fast my words, keep my commandments, and live. And so his own experience was in the vein of gaining wisdom. You'll note verse 5, acquire wisdom from godly parents. They've been further down the road than you have been. They've had experiences that you will face, but you haven't faced. And that's why he's telling young men and women. We've got some young people on this side. We've got some young people on this side. Some in the back. You've got godly parents that travel the road ahead of you. Listen to them when they talk to you, when they counsel you, when they warn you. And so that's the responsibility of parents. Look in chapter 6 and verse 20. Chapter 6, verse 20. My son, observe the commandment of your father and do not forsake the teaching of your mother. You can see not only in the chapter we're studying, but here you see a dual responsibility, the father and the mother. Sometimes fathers want to delegate it all to the mother instead of taking the responsibility they have also. In fact, the father ought to be the leader, the spiritual leader of the family. Look again at, this one I don't have to turn to. You know what it says. Proverbs 22:6. What does it say? That's right. Train up a child in the way he should go. And so there's the responsibility of parents. Ephesians 6:4 tells who to train their children in the discipline and admonition of the Lord. Fathers. Fathers, in the church at Ephesus, imagine these people coming out of paganism. In paganism, you reckon that they ever thought about teaching their children anything about God and morals? But now they're Christians, and he makes it very clear. Why did he specify fathers? Was it because there was a particular need in that congregation? I don't know. But I know in churches throughout the land there is a particular need, because oftentimes fathers do very little training of their children, teaching the Bible to their children, reading the Bible to their children, and dealing with moral instruction like we're reading about in our text. But it clearly says fathers in Ephesians 6:4. It doesn't exclude mothers, but the focus is there on fathers. But when you get to 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 14, women are to do something with the household. Do you remember what it is? Guide or rule the household. And so it's like the manager of a household. And women have the responsibility to be managers of their household. And so here in our text, we see the encouragement to young men and women. And so many of you young men and women in this audience are blessed because you've got godly parents who know the Word of God and appreciate it. Listen to them. So, we ask the question, I'll make one more point before I leave. That one. In order for parents to do this, where must it begin with the parents? That's right. Preparing themselves. You say, I don't know what to say to my kids. So what do? So I'll let the class do it? The preacher do it? If you don't know, what that says is you better get the book open. You better prepare something to teach them. That's your job. And so this verse certainly says something. The phrase Bible study is not in the text. But isn't it implied? If you're going to prepare yourself to train your children in wisdom. In verse 9, you know, you say, well, why should I listen to my godly and wise parents? What is the reason given in verse 9? What reason?
They're a blessing.
That's right. It's to your benefit. Listen, it says, they are a graceful wreath to your head and ornaments about your neck. Your father's instruction and your mother's teaching will benefit you. The idea of a wreath and an ornament was used back in that day as a sign of honor. And this is the idea. This will be an honor to you. Now you compare that. If you listen to your mother and dad, you can't see that now at your age. But he's telling you, if 5, 10, 20, 30 years from now, you'll be glad you had godly parents that guided you if you listen to them. And I know my wife and I talk about this often. Just where would we be had we not had that? How much has that meant to us? And so this is the idea. But in contrast to that, you see that in the rest of this encouragement is the warning as to what will happen if you don't listen to them. If you listen to your friends, to people who try to get you to do what they're doing. And he said, verse 18, you're the one that suffers. You lie in wait for your own blood and ambush your own life. And you're the one that will suffer by the decisions that you make. And so, if you want now to prepare for 10 years from now and 30 years from now, so you won't have to hang your head in shame about what you did back then, listen to your mother and daddy. They've traveled the road ahead of you. And they're Bible students, and they love the Lord, and they love you. Anybody had a comment? Yes, Ennis.
What you say is true about parents, but sometimes parents are going by what their parents said and did, and sometimes their parents didn't do the right thing. It didn't bring them up right. You know, if we go back to the Bible, stick with the Bible.
Good point that Ennis makes. Sometimes parents only teach what they learned from their parents instead of preparing themselves to teach what God said. That's a good point, Ennis. You know, he said this will be your children. It will grace your children. How much money do you spend, for example? You don't have to answer, but think about it. To make your children look good. How much you spend on dentures, straighten the teeth? A couple of dollars? Yeah. How much do you spend on their clothes? Especially when they're growing, you got to buy another, buy some more, buy some more. When your daughter gets 14, 16, 18, how much do you spend on makeup? Those kind of things. And so we do all these things for our children so that they won't look bad. But here is something that's far more important to their beauty and well-being, and that is this teaching. Now, it takes time. It may take some money. It's interesting how parents will spend a lot of money, say, for a sports uniform, but not on a good Bible or a good resource. What are we thinking? It takes concern. Teach your children to brush their teeth and take a bath and wash your hair and all those kind of things. And it takes concern to teach your children these principles and these lessons. You know, in 1 Peter chapter 3, he talks to the woman about beauty. Look at 1 Peter chapter 3. He talks about a woman's adornment. So over here in our text, he talks about a graceful wreath and ornaments about your neck. Adornment. But those are material, external things. He's stressing internal and moral values. over here in chapter 3, in verse 3, to a woman, who, and he's talking to her about the kind of woman she ought to be in her home. And it says, your adornment must not be merely external, braiding the hair and wearing gold jewelry or putting on dresses. And sometimes women, that's what their emphasis is in. Got to be sure and fix my hair and wear these dresses and buy some new clothes and be sure to paint your toenails. Do all of those things. But what about that inward beauty? He said, let it be the hidden person of the heart. Now here's the beauty of that inward beauty. You can paint those toes, you can fix that hair, but you know that hair is going to turn, isn't it? In fact, you may lose it. You can paint all that stuff on your face, but you'll probably get wrinkles and your complexion will change. But look at this beauty. The hidden person of the heart, the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. So all that money you spend on your children, trying to make them look good now, what if you could invest the time and the effort and the money that would help build the character that will not be effaced by time, but instead will grow into more and more beauty? And that's the picture that he's presenting here of a father's teaching and a mother's instruction. Now, in verse 10 following, he's got a particular focus. There's a lot of things that young people will be threatened with. We titled this lesson, Young Guy Enticed by a Gang. And that is the focus of this particular instruction. You see that in verse 10. My son, if sinners entice you. Look at verse 14. They say, throw in your lot with us. In verse 11, they say, come with us. Join our sorority. Join our group. They may even say our gang. And that's the enticement. Why would you want to do that? Why would you want to be a part of this sorority or this brotherhood? You know, young people go to college. This is a big enticement. There's groups for the young men, there's groups for the young women, and they want to be a part of that. They're invited to be a part of that. This is a reality. And you may go to work, and at work there may be those kind of enticements to particular groups amongst fellow employees or at school. And so this is a real situation that young people will meet. Now, the mother's instruction and the father's teaching about this kind of thing, when should it begin? When their young people are 18, about to be, and they come home and say, hey, I joined a sorority or a brotherhood, a fraternity. When should it begin?
When they're
young, that's right. Don't wait until it happens. Now's the time to talk about then. Maybe. Your children remember, you know, I remember Dad and Mom saying something about this. Use some real life examples that you can use to show them the potential dangers of these kinds of things. Note he says, they're going to entice you. The word entice, what does that suggest to you? Do they just say, here, come get in this gang? What does entice suggest?
Making it look good.
Making it look good. You know, I ate at a German restaurant on this little trip we just took. You walk in front of that case and boy, there's all those pastries. You talk about enticement, man. And I gave in. You bet. You had a comment?
Belonging, a sense of inclusion with
So the people that join that aspect is because they're missing something in the home.
That's a good observation, Dawn. When there's a vacuum in our lives, we try to fill it somehow. This is what happens with in religion about a teacher. If there's a vacuum about teaching, then some guy steps in and says he's got all the answers from God. He fills that vacuum. Same thing with this. If there's the lack of that family spirit and love and bond and fellowship, they're much more open to that at school, at college, at work, or whatever. That's a good point. What family tie besides mother and daddy can help avoid that? What? Not talking about family and blood.
Spiritual family.
Teaching your children to develop bonds with brethren. Real bonds. And how can you do that? Well, one way is by practicing something that I guess we just ought to mark it out of our Bibles. A lot of people just never do it. Called hospitality. Maybe that was just for the first century. Having people in your home and doing things with brethren, and developing that bond with brethren, getting them to appreciate brethren. And so Don's point is an excellent point. That's one of the enticements of it. Look at Proverbs 9:17. Proverbs 9:17. There's something about the forbidden. There's something about the enticement of something maybe that's I shouldn't do. Look at this, verse 17. Stolen water is sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. Hey, we can do this. Nobody will ever know. And boy, will we be the better for it. Stolen water is sweet. And you don't even have to read this one. In Genesis chapter 3, verse 6, what did Eve think when she saw the tree after listening to Satan? This is dangerous, dangerous stuff. Is that it? What did she say?
Delight to the eye.
What? Delight to the eye. Delight to the eye. This is good for food. It'll make you wise. The devil is called the tempter. And he can make sin look really good. Moses, in Hebrews 11, it says he chose to serve God rather than the passing pleasures of sin. Don't tell your children sin can't be fun. It can be. But it's the consequences down the road. Besides the present dishonor to God and to the mother and father. But sin can be enticing. And so talk to them about, it'll really sound enticing. And that's what these sinners will do. They don't know God. They don't have wisdom. And they really don't care if you suffer by joining their group. So if sinners entice you, do not consent. Do not consent. That's the ability to say what?
No.
What's wrong with teaching our children to say no? Now that takes courage and it takes commitment. When Daniel was taken to captive, we studied this in a previous lesson, and he was offered the king's food. He said no. And it tells you why he was able to say no. Do you remember why? Huh?
He determined not to defile
himself. That's right. He had already made up his mind. He had already determined. He didn't have to stop and think about it. And so, what's wrong with just learning, teaching our children to say no and helping them to have the courage to do that? If they say, come join our group, do not consent. That doesn't mean that they're going to stop there. Continue. If they say, come with us, come on. There's several of us here. Now, this particular enticement has to do with violence. You see that in verse 19. The temptation may be in another area. It may be in sensual matters, for example. It may be having to do with drugs. It may have to do with stealing. But the lessons are the same, whichever one it may be, whether it's violence or drugs or sensuality, these lessons are still valuable. So let us lie in wait for blood. Let us ambush the innocent without cause. If you didn't know anything about the Bible, what is one law that forbids that, that every man and woman on the face of the earth is bound by and should know? Love your neighbor as yourself. That's right. And so this is a violation, and it's pointed out both of them, love God and love your neighbor. Violation of both of the greatest commandments. So ambush the innocent without cause. Yes. That's a good point. Oftentimes they'll pick on the one they feel like is most vulnerable to getting them to do their bidding. I ask you now on this verses 11 through 14, you'll see on your lesson, I don't know if any of you did this. These verses talk about the kind of things that appeal to young people. And so in verse 11, you see, it's the excitement of the thrill. Let us lie in wait and ambush. Boy, this is going to be exciting and going to be fun. Is there anything today that young people are enticed to do just because it's exciting and fun?
All over the place.
Give me a specific example.
Drugs, drinking.
You ever see young people do something so crazy as to get on a ride that's going to take them up 50 feet in the air, drop them at 80 miles an hour, twist them all around, maybe turn them upside down? What in the world are they doing that for? What are they doing it for? Excitement and thrill. That's right. You see people climbing cliffs with, you're just several hundred feet down. What are they doing that for? Is there money up there? Excitement, thrill. It's a real appeal. This is going to be fun, man. You don't want to just sit around home and mow the grass, do you? And so, there's the appeal of verse 12. Look, we'll swallow them alive like Sheol, even whole as those go down into the pit. Now, we are going to be victorious. Man, we're going to be on top. We're going to win. What today could appeal to your children from the standpoint of victory and winning? Sports. You bet. Tackle the guy. Doesn't make any difference if he hurts a little bit. We got to win. Kick that soccer ball. Whatever it takes, we got to win. Back when I was in high school, pretty rough high school, the football boys had a pot of money. And the boy that got it was the boy that drew the first blood. Great young people, wasn't it? Good sports. Boy, it really builds character. But here's the appeal of victory. Overpowering. Why do you get out here, these young people get out here on Woodland Hills? I don't know if they still do it. Here's this little road, two-lane road. Never know when traffic's coming. Put two cars side by side and take off and do 60 and 80 miles an hour. Why? See who can win. The thrill, and I can beat you. My car's faster. Do you get money? No, I just won. Yes.
One of the things that I find with children, especially who join games or who are caught up in behavior that they know is probably not right, is because they don't don't love themselves. You know, that law about loving others as you love yourself. Parents need to give their child a sense of great worth, and so they will have the power within themselves to say no if they really love themselves.
Okay, that's a good point. Sometimes young people are seeking something to build their self-esteem. And if parents can teach, you have self-esteem because why? You're made in the image of God. Not because you make A's in school. Not because you can run faster than the other players on the field. Because you're made in the image of God. And so you don't need these other things to build your self-esteem. That's a good observation from Linda, who's had a little bit of experience in raising children. And so verse 13. We will find all kinds of precious wealth and fill our houses with spoil. Buddy, we're going to gain out of this. Don't read it now just because I'm running short on time. But 1 Timothy 6:11 following, Paul writes to Timothy. And he warned about the love of money that some just seek after. And so where do young people learn? I got to do what benefits me. Maybe back in the home, seeing mom and dad. Instead of learning the lesson of serving others. In Ephesians 4:28, Paul told the Ephesian Christians to work and not steal. In order that they may what? Give to others. Serve somebody. Not just for me. Do they see that in the parents since they're growing up, or is it all on us? Instead of we'll fill our purses, hey, how about maybe we can do something that will empower us to help our fellow man? But that's nothing here about this enticement. And so then in verse 14, throw in your lot with us, we'll all have one purse. Hey, we'll get some shirts. And we'll all have the same name on it. Isn't that great? And we'll all share in whatever's done. So I was talking about the sense of family a while ago, Dawn. And so we'll all be one in this thing. And so there's that the appeal of camaraderie. And so now adults aren't exposed to that, are they? They know temptation to adults to the idea of joining a club for camaraderie purposes. Is there? You ever heard of the Lions Club or the JCs or a lot of those things? I'm not saying those things are wrong. A bowling league. So parents, before you talk to your children, look within and use some judgment as to the kind of counsel you may give them. Verse 15, he said, my son, do not walk with them. Keep your feet from their path. What's wrong with teaching our children? You don't have to be like everybody else. Parents want their children to just fit in. Fit in. Why do they have to fit in? Why can't we teach them the lesson of 1 Peter 2? You're aliens on this earth. You're strangers. The lesson that Abraham exemplified, he said, I'm a stranger and a pilgrim on this earth. On the earth. And he was seeking a country of his own. We talked about that Sunday morning. A country of his own where people would share his ideals and his values. Why can't we teach our children? You don't have to fit in. And so the Bible warns about that. There's so many verses in Proverbs we could talk about, but our time will not allow it. Note in verse 16, what a lesson for parents. You say, son or daughter, beware of these kind of enticements. Why? I'm just telling you to. Is that it? I'm your daddy. I'm your mama. But no, that's not the appeal made. Look at verse 16. What's that first word? For. What kind of word is that? It's a logical term. He's appealing to reason. Here's why I'm telling you this, son. And we as parents, can we explain why? For their feet run to evil and they hasten to shed blood. And the young person says, you bet. That's what I like about it. But wait. It says, indeed, it is useful to spread the baited net in the side of any bird. We ask you the question, why is it useful to spread the net in the side of the bird?
He's,
no, I ain't going there. It'd be a pretty dumb bird to say, I see it, but I'm going to take my chances. And so this young person, one or two things is true. I know what you said, Mom and Dad, but it ain't going to happen to me. That happened to young people? It ain't going to happen to me. They go race. It'll never happen to me. They're crippled for the rest of their life, or they kill one of their companions. I can drink, it won't hurt me. Kill a friend, it won't hurt me. I can engage in immoral actions, it won't hurt me. And a little child is brought into this earth without parents, godly parents. And so, read this. They lie in wait for whose blood? Their own blood. That's what they don't see. Their own blood. They ambush their own lives. Either they don't see the end or they see it. But, verse 18, they see it, but they're willing to take the chance. How foolish. And he's warning about the consequences of our decisions. So are the ways of everyone who gains by violence. It takes away the life of its possessors. And you can exchange the word violence for these other areas that we were talking about, whether it's immorality or drugs or stealing or whatever it may be. That to engage in so many of these things that offer the appeal of thrill and excitement and power and victory and personal gain and camaraderie. May have terrible, terrible personal consequences. So what a great little text to parents and to young people if they just listen about this young man who was enticed by the game. Okay, thank you for your good comments and your attention tonight.